Today is Thursday, September 13th, 2018, and this is Daily DVR. Hello and welcome back everyone to Daily DVR. My name is Axel, and Daily DVR is a proud member of the DVR Podcast Network. Check out our other great pods like Podcast Winterfell and the Westworld Theorycast at DVRpodcast.com, baby. We're going to be a five-day-a-week podcast. That's why it's daily. 3 days a week for everyone, 5 days a week to patrons. So I'd love for you to become a patron, like some fabulous people like Bill, and Derek, and Brett, and Andy, and Newbie Doos, and Matt, James, so many others, so many other great people. Come become a patron with us. You'll get it 5 days a week as I clear my throat to start the show. And it's for as little as $3 a month, patreon.com/DVR. And I also am very excited to have our first bit of feedback today from Andy. And you can give feedback too by going to dvrpodcast@gmail.com, emailing us there. Or you can find us on Twitter at @DVRpodcast, or you can find me at @WAxelFoley. So without any further ado, what I decided to do is I've been having fun doing the show. And I appreciate anyone who is listening, and I appreciate anyone who's sending iTunes reviews out there on your little phone there. I really do appreciate that. Please continue to do so. It does help us get noticed. And one of the things I wanted to do is, speaking of patrons and writing in, Andy wrote me in. I appreciate that. Ando Calrissian coming in. We were even able to have a little email exchange. I learned about Andy, what a cool dude, what he does for a living, and just interesting. That's what I love. That's why I do this. That's why I started podcasting to begin with, is to connect with other people that I normally wouldn't. And, you know, it's funny, in today's such divided society, you have people, oh, I'm here, I'm like this, or they live there, they're going to be like this, or whatever, and I've just never thought like that. I've always been able to find people in the weirdest places that I have something in common with, and that we both share the same basic tenet of life, of just respecting other people, and being open to everything, and learning and stuff. And it was just really cool to make a connection there with Andy, and I appreciate the email. And he writes in. I'm going to start with feedback, long story short. Whenever I get feedback, I'm doing it right off the top. First question about Mayans. SOA is one of my TV blind spots. I think I've only seen one episode. I enjoyed it, but for some reason never got back into it. Do you think it's a must watch? Yes, I do. Because you followed up by saying, agreed with you that The Shield is one of the most underrated shows ever. It's sad that most people don't even know what it is. The last time I recommended to someone, they asked me if Tony Stark ever shows up. That's funny. Oh man, Andy, that is hilarious, because you know what, bro? I never made that association that someone would say, hey, have you seen, you know, like The Shield? And then the person just hears Shield and thinks Shield or Agents of Shield, right? Which there is a TV show. It's funny, but seriously, if you love The Shield, definitely watch Sons of Anarchy. You may have not listened when I talked about the Mayans in depth last episode, which was yesterday, but maybe when I have previously talked about Sons of Anarchy, the thing to remember is, very much like The Shield, Sons of Anarchy is like allegory. It's not real, you know? I don't believe that Sons of Anarchy is supposed to take place in any real world. They're not really in California, right? Kurt Sutter isn't really trying to make any statements about the penal system or cops or anything like that, really. It's Shakespearean. It's a tragedy, and it's completely over the top. way more so than The Shield. I mean, The Shield was a bit over the top at times, maybe more than a bit, but Sons of Anarchy just notches it up a few levels. And I think the thing that you'll appreciate about Sons of Anarchy, and the same thing I appreciate about Mayans, and what was really missing from that medieval show, which I can't, The Bastard Executioner, that Kurt Sutter made after SOA, very quickly after SOA too, sorry if I was clearing my throat today and yesterday, but have had a cold this week, so I'm trying my best, peoples. To get back to it, it's the basics of story, which I think you'll enjoy in Sons of Anarchy. He crafts just a wonderful story with wonderful characters, and the story is always, everything hinges on emotion and people. It's a soap opera, you know? So for instance, there's not an underlying mythology to Sons of Anarchy other than the emotional import of people's actions, right? So there's no, you know, zombies beyond the wall. There's no light in a cave. There's no anything like that. But what there is I just keep on going back to Shakespeare, and Sutter himself in interviews always says that that's like his inspiration. And I really believe it. That's really what the show is. It's like, you know what? I'll put it to you this way. Okay. It's like this. Sons of Anarchy would be the play that Arya was watching in Game of Thrones. And if Game of Thrones fans know that, they'll understand that. That's the level that Kurt Sutter is working on. He's not trying to make something that's gritty and realistic, and you know, it's described in that way, but really the show is just such a great character study, and the story and the soap opera elements to it are just both, it's funny, it's like people will just die out of nowhere. Someone will just decide to, one episode, they'll just decide to do that crazy thing you thought they might have done the whole time, if you know what I mean. It's just, it's a great show. So I would say, if I had not already seen Sons of Anarchy and I started watching it, it might take a little bit for me to get into it, especially, that's why I preface it, because in our current kind of political and world climate, which is that people are a little bit on edge and more, you know, trying to turn a little bit more towards empathy, if they can. And so Sons of Anarchy and Mayans are both really ultra violent. They're completely male dominated world. Those Sons of Anarchy does have very strong female characters, which I've yet to see in Mayans yet, but it's a brutal, adrenaline filled machismo, but at the same time, these guys are like crying in the back with their brothers. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's kind of fun. It's fun. I like it. And that I will admit too, as a male, that aspect of that male bonding and being with your bros, that does appeal to me. And, same as like in Rescue Me, you know, things like that. So that is a part of it as well, you know? It's fun to see that, you know, I mean, I can't lie. There's parts in Sons of Anarchy where I watch it. And I was like, oh, that's just like when I'm, you know, hanging out with a Hustler or a Afu. Oh, I remember when I saw Solo, we made a really terrible joke. That's like, they'll make like really like Sons of Anarchy's like that. They'll go there, you know? It's a fun show. So long story short, definitely. Let's see. He also continued with a correction, and I appreciate this. I believe you mentioned Todd Haynes as the director of the new Joker movie. It's actually Todd Phillips. Yes. I could only imagine if Todd Haynes was making a Joker movie, and man, I would pay money to see that, but you are right. It is Todd Phillips, famously the director of The Hangover. I get to talking and my memory's getting bad as I get older, I'm telling you. The Will Ferrell movie when he starts a fraternity, that was classic. But yeah, that is Todd Phillips. And Todd Phillips has a there's an edge to him. He famously did a documentary about hazing. This is how his career really started. And he shot it he shot it independently. It was then, I believe, sold to HBO. I could be incorrect about this. I'm going off the top of my head. But it's never seen the light of day. Certain people have seen it. I'm sure at some point it'll come out. But he didn't get the correct rights. And a lot of the kids were underage. And the school tried to sue or something. There's a story behind it. I might be getting it wrong. But anyway, it's always reminded me that Todd Phillips has a very Hunter S. Thompson kind of edge to him, or I should say tries to, which, you know, it's not, that's not too much of it in some of the films he makes, but he's a big time director. But his background, he has a bit of that kind of merry prankster, maybe not so merry. I shouldn't say that. I confused my 60s people, radicals here. But more, you know, he has that edge to him. So you're right. I should remember that. I just misspoke. But Todd Phillips, I think that Joker movie might be kind of cool. But if Todd Haynes did it and it was all done with Barbies, that would be amazing too. If anyone remembers his Natalie Wood film, that was actually his first film. He had a couple of suggestions. Andy says, keep with the personal anecdotes. I'll do that. I appreciate that. Sometimes I pull them back because sometimes, you know, there's a core group of people that have been listening with us and we've all been doing this for so long. And then when new people join, sometimes I'm hesitant to just be calling people. I don't want to make people feel like they're not part of the crew. You know, they don't know who I'm talking about. You know, it's all in jokes. But you're right about the personal anecdotes and things like that. He mentions when I mentioned the old Disney VHS boxes. Yeah, I love that. I'll keep doing that. I appreciate that. I also like when you reference other things creators have done. Hey, I just did that. Right? Todd Phillips and Todd Haynes. About Shane Black. And he says, side note, I agree the Predator looks like garbage, but Kiss Kiss and other guys were fantastic. Yeah, they were. Those were great movies. Yeah, Predator, it's too bad. Some reviews came out and they said it was very uneven. And that's how I described it. And that's how it looks. It's unfortunate. Who knows, though? See, that's why with Shane Black, he's a weird dude, you know? Like, when you look at Lethal Weapon, that's a weird movie. Murtaugh wanting to kill himself the whole movie, that's weird. That the studio even allowed that in the movie to continue. Even I remember that as a kid, because I was like, okay, they set this up in the beginning of the movie. It's going to get dropped, you know? This will be, like, pretty quickly resolved. Because, you know, like when Arnold Schwarzenegger or whatever had a problem in a movie, it was quickly resolved, you know? But then it wasn't. And I was like, I've come to find out that they actually cut out a lot more of the psychological weirdness that he wanted to include. So what I wonder is, I'm still going to see this when it comes out on Blu-ray. And I wonder if there's kind of something else going on here, you know? Whether he made maybe a satire. Maybe there's a satire under here. From the preview, I could see, and I might be stretching here, a kind of a Starship Troopers vibe. That, you know, in this movie, the Predator really isn't a Predator. You know, I know that, spoiler alert, not really, but there's an introduction of a big Predator, a giant Predator in this movie. And that kind of sounds kind of Trumpy to me. Like, it's got to be bigger. It's got to be better, you know? So I'm kind of feeling this out, but I'll see when it comes out. It's interesting, though. He's done enough interesting work for me to put that extra effort into it, if you know what I mean. So thank you, Andy, for that feedback. You the man. And if anyone has any other feedback, send it in. dvrpodcast@gmail.com and I will read it. Let's start with some news. So I talked about Superman. I won't spend too much time on it, but now everybody wants Michael B. Jordan to be Superman. That'd be cool. I mean, I think that he would be good. I mean, everybody wants him for everything, though. You know, so it's kind of like he's like plug and play at this point. You know, he's kind of like Hollywood's it boy. Now, of course, there was some kerfuffle. Oh, my God, he's black. Who gives a fuck? I do not care when people change things. I really don't. I might have a comment on it and say, oh, I think it would have been better if they had done it right. But look, if they're going to create something, let them do it. Let's see what happens. We'll talk about it after it's done. And as far as that's concerned, I'm just never a person who thinks that an adaptation has to have anything to do with the previous incarnation. Redo the whole fucking thing. Change the whole story. I really do not care. There's no sacred cows in art. That's what I should say. Art has no sacred cows. So if Dick Wolf remade The Wire and called it Law and Order, The Wire, I just go, this is dumb. Who cares? I probably at first, because it's Dick Wolf. Then if I watch, I go, hey, this is a passable show. Why did they call it The Wire? They wanted IP. They wanted to make it cool. Who cares? It's not real. Then all of a sudden Avon comes on. who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't change The Wire, right? So if you like a Superman comic and that Superman looked a certain way and then he looks different, who cares? It's not like this is art. Like, I don't know. Most of the time you ask people who created something when it's changed, they say, I don't give a shit. You know, like I can think of a famous example of when Stephen King complained that Stanley Kubrick changed The Shining. He was so upset. Oh, it's terrible. What's the change? In the book, the hotel makes him crazy, but in the movie, it seemed like he was crazy. So subtle, right? So you can see. What's the difference? Who cares? If in the book they had cast like an Indian guy in the movie, in The Shining, and he did great, would anybody give a shit? Did Jack Torrance need to be a white dude? You know, it's just the same thing. Does Superman, Kal-El, he's an alien. Who cares? Batman? Who cares? You know, next, then they'll say, let's have Donald Glover be in this. So it's Michael B. Jordan or Donald Glover. I love both of those guys, but I also think there's a lot of other people that could be considered too. So if you're looking for a great Superman, but also I'm for the diversity. So if they want to make a black Superman to make a point, I'm cool with it. Go ahead. If it's a good movie, it's a good movie. Plus a bunch of little black kids get to see them be Superman. Why would I not want to see that? You know, I mean, what? It's just, you know, whatever. But I thought it was fun because I had thought about who could be Superman, who could be Batman. Now, since I'm allowing myself to kind of get into this stuff, I thought I'd throw some people out. Now, first, yesterday I said Logan Marshall Green. I think that dude's great. I was really impressed with the film Upgrade. I suggest anybody who likes sci-fi, watch that film. It's fantastic. It's actually from the guy who wrote Saw. He's an Australian writer, and he's been working with Blumhouse and all those crazy horror franchises that I really don't know a lot about for over 15 years, I think. And this was, I think, only the second film he directed, but it seemed to me the first one that he really had control of, and Upgrade is fantastic. Logan Marshall Green is awesome. Now we had Kit Harington for Batman. Think about a couple other people. Who else could be Batman? A young, cool Batman. I don't know. I have no idea. I hadn't planned to get into it. I'm not going to play this game. There's a hunt. I like him. I like this. I don't know. You know why I don't know? Because I could sit and look at a bunch of different actors, but it really depends on the script too and what they're really going to do with it. And quite frankly, I think they've kind of done the dour Batman to death. Like, let's change Batman. Let's make it so he accepts his parents' death and the reason why he's going out at night and doing this stuff. He's healthy. He gets good sleep. He sleeps during the day. He's very friendly with Alfred. They don't have a situation where Alfred's constantly worried about him or Batman's psychotic, going nuts, you know, with the Joker and all that. No, Batman is actually a guy who has a code. He sticks to it. Sometimes it's tough. You know, life is tough. But he's not going crazy over this idea of what's good, what's bad, being a vigilante and all that. He's actually settled all that. How about that? And he's kind of funny and he's cool and he kicks ass, but he's into technology. Let's do that, like a techno more Batman, right? That was always a part of Batman because he doesn't have superpowers. How about that? That's my new Batman. No more dark Batman. That's what I say. And Superman, I say, get him off Earth. That's what I say for Superman. Get Superman off Earth. It doesn't work. I don't like it. It's done. It's been done so many times. Oh my God, he puts glasses on and he looks different. Oh no, but well, he can make his face vibrate when he's like, I remember for the Flash, they said, in the TV show, they have that. Why can't you see the Flash, like recognize it? Because he vibrates that part of his face. That's cool. I want to see, I don't know. Let's see a Superman who's in a different world, right? Because Superman means something different when he's on Earth, because it's Earth that gives him these powers, right? So let's see him somewhere else. I don't know, just a thought, because as far as actors go, I'll tell you the truth. I want them to cast someone I've never seen before. That's what I always want. All right, going to move through some very quick news. For my reality fans out there, there is a new show coming out, and it is called Married at First Sight Honeymoon Island. It is basically exactly what I said I didn't want, but it's okay because they're doing it in the beginning. And it is Bachelor in Paradise cross with Married at First Sight. So you go to an island, you spend 2 weeks there, you're paired up. At the end, you decide whether you're going to marry the person or not. Okay? And if it's anything like Married at First Sight, it's going to be pretty awful and a lot of fun. So that is premiering, I think it's in October. Yeah, let's see. I don't know. October 23rd at 10 p.m. on Lifetime, 8 episodes, Tuesday night. Looking forward to it, baby. All right, next piece of news. I just thought I'd bring that up because last night, I'll go into those. It wasn't a finale at Married First Sight. Damn, that thing never ends. Let's see. They released the new trailer for the Coen Brothers movie, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. And I watched a bit of it. Like I said, I never really kind of get to an end of a trail. I mean, with the Coen Brothers, I think they actually cut this, but I don't need to see a Cliff Notes of a movie, because that's what most trailers are now. But this looks fantastic. This looks funny. It's kind of a return to, you know, they've done Westerns before, but this has a, like, kind of an edge to it. And it's just, it looks great. I love the Coen Brothers. I love everything they've done. When you think about their canon, their oeuvre, it's just amazing. They're just pure filmmakers. And this film is packed with great people. And Tim Blake Nelson looks to be playing a big part. And he's just fantastic anytime he's paired up with the Coens. James Franco, Brendan Gleeson, Zoe Kazan, Tom Waits. James Franco looks great in this. That's a handsome man. I got to tell you something, people. That James Franco is a handsome man. But anyway, Ballad of Buster Scruggs. That looks great. Also watch a trailer for The Romanoffs, which is Matthew Weiner's new series, which actually premieres very soon, October 12th on Amazon. It's an anthology series. And they're all written and directed his name is Weiner, isn't it? I mean, that's his name. I'm going to say it. It's Weiner, okay? I'm sorry, Weiner. They're all directed by Weiner. And, you know, it's an anthology, and it's somehow connected to people who believe that they are the descendants of the Romanoffs. And it looks fantastic. This preview isn't going to show us anything, as the greatest coming next episodes ever in the history of man were Mad Men, where somebody would open a door and say, hey, and then someone would sit down at a desk and go, oh, and then it would just like 2 second clips that would tell you absolutely nothing about what was coming on the next. And similarly, I don't think that this tells us too much, but it's going to be interesting, and I am down for it because Mad Men is one of the greatest television shows ever made. And everyone should watch it. And that's what I have to say about that, because it is. It's absolutely fantastic and beautiful and wonderful and so much more than you think it ever would be. James Marsden. Where do we see him? Oh, yes, Teddy. Poor Teddy. Teddy on Westworld. I almost said Westwood. Westworld. Well, he's going to be in a new Netflix series. It's called Dead to Me. And it's pretty interesting, actually. He'll play opposite Ed Asner in the role of Abe, a witty gentleman living in an assisted care facility, and Linda Cardinelli, love her, Freaks and Geeks, a resident named Judy who works at Abe's home and whom Marsden's character is drawn to. Dead to Me is described as a dark comedy, and it comes from producers Will Farrell, Adam McKay, Jessica Elbum, and Christina Applegate. So when you get those Funny or Die, when you get Farrell and McKay involved, they're really good. Succession is a really good show, though I have not finished the first season, I have to admit. My wife dropped out on it, but I'm down with it. This got me interested. I've always wanted to make a film that was a love story of people living in an old folks' home. I always wanted to do it. Never did it, never wrote it, but always had the idea. I thought, and it's been made. But I think that's I think those places are interesting, right? Any place where you have people. And when I drive by here in Portland, they have a lot of private home health aid houses where they'll take care of like five or six older people in a house, you know? And I always just wonder what it's like to live there and to be there. I don't think it's all bad. I mean, getting old is hard. There's stories there, you know? Same thing whenever I go to a hotel, I always spend a lot of time talking to the people who work there, because what you'd see working in a hotel, I could only imagine. Last time I was in a hotel, Heath Solo's wedding, I start talking to a guy in a hallway, because I talk to everybody. And then later he sees me carrying a Gundam. I build Gundam models. You know, they're Japanese robots. Go look it up. You know, look up Gundam. Or Gunpla. Turns out that he says, hey, the guy in the morning makes these. And I start talking to him. He paints them. And look at that. It was awesome. So anyway, hotels, cool places. Old folks' homes, cool places. New series, Dead to Me. It was just announced, so who knows how long. There's no production notes on it, so I don't know when that's coming out. But that sounds pretty cool. And Ed Asner, pretty cool. Now, another show, American Gods Season 2, loses its showrunner. Just cancel this fucking show already because it sucked. I'm sorry. I apologize to anyone who listening who liked that show. Or who likes Neil Gaiman, if that's the correct pronunciation. I'm not a huge Neil Gaiman fan. I read one or two of his books when I was younger. His style is just not my thing. Just isn't my thing. I know a lot of people love him. The story seemed kind of interesting, but kind of like cheesy, like the new gods, technology. I don't know. That just seemed kind of cheesy to me. You know, but it seemed kind of cool. I mean, I watched like three or four episodes. The lead is like, was just terrible. He was like nothing. And it just didn't seem cohesive. You know, it didn't seem right. I didn't finish the season, and there's been a lot of fighting. Brian Fuller was attached to it. Then a new showrunner came in, then they fired them. And then, so it's, there's a struggle between Gaiman, and this thing just seems like a mess. Then Gillian Anderson left the show after one season. So I think at this point in time, you know, it ain't working, right? I mean, it's sad to put a lot of people out of work, but truly what this does do is put a lot of people's career on hold. Okay. Because there are people who would not take a job who know, or they don't know if they're going to have a job. So in a situation like this, when I say I hope they cancel it, I'm actually am thinking about the working people who are on this as, you know, who knows, the gaffer and whatnot, right? But anyway, come on. You got, they even started shooting it and then went on hiatus. So it's not like the showrunner left before they shot the second season. So this thing is a mess. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I say dump it. It's there's too much other stuff to go, and it seems like the people working on it could be doing something good and instead of getting at each other. All right, one more little piece of news here, which is Apple can remove your purchased digital films. No shit, they can remove your music. Anybody can. Just a quick note on the DVR Daily Pod, on the Daily DVR podcast. Anything you have in the cloud, you do not own. Okay? So, I mean, that's anything like that. If it's your website, if it's your, you know, if it's music, if it's your photos, if it's whatever, you know, I mean, we've seen how many times iCloud is hacked. I don't use it. I don't use any of those services. I don't back up my pictures to an iCloud and have it linked to this and that. I know so many people who have had it hacked or missing or something happened. You know, I mean, look, I'm a tech guy, but it's just the truth. When you purchase an album through iTunes, Spotify, whatever the hell people use these days, you purchase the right to access that content. And basically, what you do is you purchase a key, and that key opens a door in their server and allows you to open up that locker and take out what you want and look at it. But in reality, your hands never leave the locker. You see what I'm trying to say? That piece doesn't come to you unless you download it. Now, when you buy something on iTunes and everything, you can download. And I think that I don't do it anymore. So I don't know if Apple has DRM on the individual. They used to not. And then for a while, when I did buy stuff back in the day, you'd have to get some janky program to take it off or something. But anyway, it's the same thing for movies. You know, if you buy like things on Amazon and you have it in the cloud, they can lose the license to it, or they can take it away, or the company can go out of business. So I don't know, just another call for physical media. Buy physical media if you can, or if you use this stuff, just realize that, right? Like, it doesn't have to be a call for someone to say, don't ever buy anything from Apple again. No, you're buying an extended rental. That's really what you're doing. And you should just be aware of that. So if you're okay with that, then you buy it. And if that movie, if you come in one day to watch it and it's not available, then that's the purpose you took. But they kind of do tell you in the fine print, but they don't really tell you, right? So anyway, just a little thought right there. I'm kind of a physical media person, I'm going to be honest with everybody right here. So this is true too. People who say, I'm going to be honest with you, when the next thing they say, when people say they're always going to lie or something. No, I say it a lot. It's just a turn of phrase. All right, DJ Tim Hines. Anyway, that was for DJ. Sometimes if it's a book, a film, something I'm collecting, like my Gundam, like an old toy. Maybe there's something that I want that I know I could get from like a flea market, or, you know, like something, some piece of memorabilia media or something. And sometimes I know you can go right on Amazon and buy it, or you can do this or do that. Sometimes I don't, just because I like trying to hunt it out and find it. Is that weird? I think other people do that too. But I do that. There's some things that I'd like to have, some movies that I'd like to have that I know I could go on Amazon and get or something, but I was like, you know what? I'll watch it one day, but I want to try to find that at a garage sale one day. Sometimes I do that. It's kind of fun. Not something like I need, but something just I want, you know, we'll see. Like I see some, I don't know. It just actually recently happened with my son and I wanted like some Gundam little model we could get. Ooh, that's a cool one. We could order for Amazon. Have it tomorrow. I was like, no, don't do that. Let's see if this store gets it in. Well, I'd like to buy from the store. First of all, it's local, but also because it's just, you don't need it, right? So you add a little bit more fun to it. I don't know. It's like edging for people who know what that is. Edging for pop culture. That's what I'm going to call it. All right, cool. Well, that was the news. And I did email. Just want to give a heads up, tonight is Thursday, and let's go over the premieres. Starting off tonight, premiering on Netflix at midnight Western time, my time, American Vandal Season 2. Last season was about dicks. I hear this season is about shit. I'm down. I didn't read anything to do with what this season's going to be about, except I saw the headline. It was about shit. I'm not reading anything about it. I'm watching it. I know it was actually shot in my town, right here in Portland. A lot of it was shot in and around Portland, and I know some people who saw it being shot, and I think I should have talked to someone who worked a little bit on it. But American Vandal on Netflix was fantastic. It is so unique. It was so funny. It was so weird. It actually, in many ways, reminded me of Parks and Rec. I know that sounds strange, and maybe the association is off, but some out there might get it. I loved American Vandal. I thought it was just so weird. So basically what it is it's a fake documentary of high school students trying to figure out who drew a bunch of dicks on the teacher's cars. Dicks as in penises. Dicks and balls, too. And that was important, too, because the way the balls were drawn became very important. And it sounds like it's not over the top. I think some people were turned off by it because they saw that and they're like, oh, this is like some raunchy. It's not at all. It's actually completely sincere, and the kids are fantastic. And it's low budget, does not take itself seriously at all, completely experimental, funny, poignant. I can't tell you, it was one of the best series of last year. It really was. So check it out, American Vandal Season 2. I'm probably going to watch another episode tonight. Let's see. Another thing, just a heads up before I get to the premiere calendar for Metacritic and look at Just Watch. The Emmys are on Monday. So I wanted to do something. So what I think I'm going to do is on Monday and Tuesday, I'm just going to dedicate the show to the Emmys. I wouldn't end up talking about Better Call Saul till later, but I'll dedicate the show to the Emmys. So that'll be kind of fun. We'll do pre-Emmys on Monday, and then we'll do a post-Emmys show on Tuesday. So that will be very cool. So I look forward to that. And if anyone has any feedback or reaction to the Emmys, email me. You can find me on Twitter, but the best way to get your feedback in is to email me, because at Twitter, it becomes just a mess of, I'm like going through, and then I reply, and I can't. I'm too old for this shit, so just email me. Even that's too complicated, because then Gmail starts giving me a fucking tree. Anyway, I'm such a pain in the ass. What's premiering tonight? Not too much. Like I said, Netflix has... it's kind of weird, because like I say, the Netflix premieres for the day are really the day before. But there's a new movie called Reversing Row on Netflix, a documentary, which we should all be watching. Crackle actually has a series called Snatch. Has anyone ever seen it? I wanted to try to watch the first step. Maybe I should. I think I have Crackle on my TV for free. But I always wondered about that series. But that premieres, I think it's season 2 or 3. Flipper Flop Atlanta. And there's something called The Oslo Diaries, which is premiering on HBO. And I had not clicked through to see what that was, because it looked kind of interesting. A group of Israelis and Palestinians come together in Oslo for an unsanctioned peace talks during the 1990s in order to bring peace to... Oh, interesting. Oh, this was about the Oslo Accords? That's interesting. Okay. All right, I'm going to check this out. HBO always has great docs, but that's pretty cool. Okay, I will definitely check this out. Very nice. Okay, cool. I'm happy about that. Wow, now I'm like excited. I love political kind of films like that, that talk about how things actually, especially geopolitical. But anyway, Netflix is dropping a bunch of shit tonight, and I'll go over... more of it tomorrow, But it's interesting. For some reason, Metacritic doesn't have American Vandal listed. So I'm pretty sure I have that date right, that it premieres tonight. But I will, I'll double check, or we'll find out, because guess what? I'll be back tomorrow. I did miss something, which was that the season finale of Castle Rock premiered on Hulu. I believe that was last night or 2 nights ago, and I didn't mention that. That was yesterday. I didn't mention that to people. I saw the first 3 or 4 episodes, then my Hulu trial ended, and I got to get Hulu again. I'm terrible. I'm just going to get Hulu, especially for the podcast. It would be a good idea. But yeah, definitely a lot of people were into that. And there was a lot of questions about that. And I really thought that Castle Rock wasn't that bad. I was at first afraid that it was going to be Once Upon a Time in Castle Rock. And just like every episode, some Stephen King character was going to pop up, but that didn't happen. And the cast is really good. It wasn't a great show, but it was pretty good the first 3 episodes. So I definitely do want to see more of that. Let's see, anything else really cool premiere? No, I'm looking through the list right now. Not really much today, besides that American Vandal tonight, which I hope is tonight. And if it's not, it's going to be next week. What I recorded last night, American Horror Story Apocalypse, I'll give my quick review. That, I don't know if I'm going to check back in with this show. The first half hour was fun, but it's just too crazy. And then it became this bottle episode with witches and leather and people getting whipped. And, you know, that's just not my thing. I don't know. I can't say I'm wholly into the American Horror Story aesthetic. I just think that it's wild and crazy, but maybe I'll check back in. The Sinner I didn't get to check out, but I will. And at some point I'll go deeper into The Sinner. What's on tonight? I'm recording It Happened One Night is on Turner Classic Movies. It's been a long time since I saw that. Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert. Check it out. It Happened One Night. Jersey Shore. What a great show. I love the Jersey Shore. I know you all think I'm crazy, but I'm from Jersey. These are my people. I grew up with these people. When you see the Jersey Shore, these are the people I grew up with. I'm not joking. Not all of them, but that was a good quarter of the people I grew up with, maybe half. And actually, these last 2 seasons, these reunions have been kind of heartwarming. They hardly ever fight. They just have fun. They're actually really therapeutic and nice to each other now. And it's really just stupid fun. And my wife and I love to watch it and make fun of it. But let's see, that's all I got for what's coming out tonight. We got Andy had a great email, and it's time to get into Better Call Saul. So let's do it, baby. Better Call Saul. Let me tell you something. This show means so much to me. I have to preface this because when I was like 10 years old, I was in love with movies and TV and all that kind of stuff. And my dad bought a Hi-8 camera. If you remember Hi-8, you could take the tape and put it inside a VHS tape and, like a big bulky one, right? you could later do that with, you know something? It wasn't Hi-8. As I talked that through, I misspoke. It was a VHS-C. So my dad, because you could do that with the VHS-C. So I was talking right. The Hi-8 was the second one. That was Aaron's camera that I stole in college. But my dad had a VHS-C camera. And I took it from him. And I started making little movies of G.I. Joes. And I started to get into the idea when a lot of people who first get into making movies, you first really get fascinated with just the idea of film in general, the idea of being able to play with time and space and make a cut, you know, just do this simple thing like the little G.I. Joe figures dancing around the camera, another G.I. Joe figure comes in and punches him, and then you have him dance a little, you take him out, but you leave the other character, and it's like he almost disappeared, like he punched him so hard he disappeared, you know. You could do little like that Michel Gondry stuff. that those in-camera tricks. And that's what Better Call Saul reminds me of every time I watch it. It is pure artistry. It's pure love of creation, of the medium, of every aspect of filmmaking, from mise-en-scene, what's in the background, what fills your frame, to costumes, the acting, locations, sound. Every aspect of film is highlighted in Better Call Saul. And in this episode in particular, which could have been titled Jimmy Dunn Slipped, because slipping Jimmy, this is going to be spoilers for Better Call Saul peeps. Jimmy has slipped. He can't process what happened to Chuck. He just can't process it. He's avoiding going to the therapist. He's avoiding dealing with, he keeps on repeating this plan. This is why I love this show too. Man, it gives me chills when I talk about it. It really does. And let me tell you something. If I let myself, I could start crying. That's how much this show touches me. And it's not what it's about. It really isn't. Listen to the Better Call Saul podcast, the official podcast. Just the way they all talk to each other, the people that work together, it just seems to me like it is the greatest environment for creativity. I couldn't imagine a greater environment for creativity than working with these people. It's just amazing. But Jimmy slipped. He can't handle it. Like I said, he says he's not going to go to the therapist. Oh, something happened. And he keeps on repeating. That's what I was going to say. You know, that happens in life. That's why it got me chills, because it's so true. When people keep on telling you, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing good. I got this. I got this. I got that. What are you doing? I'm doing good. Yeah. How you do? I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to do that. Then I'm going to do this. Right? Like, they have this plan, right? And Jimmy has this plan. I'm just going to work for 9 months, and then I'm going to get my law degree back. And then Kim and I are going to open up, you know, our new agency, Wexler and McGill, and it's going to be great. And he's on that plan, and he's on that plan. But he's not following that plan. She's not following that plan. She doesn't want that plan. He doesn't want that plan. They're not talking about it. Kim's pushing Jimmy to go see a therapist, but she's not dealing with her issues either. This episode, we see that she's dealing with her business issues better than Jimmy, because it seems like what she's going to do is she's going to pawn off the big account she has with the bank and be able to do what she loves, which is help people. So we saw... I want to go back, because I was saying she's not doing anything, he's not doing anything. I should say that this is the impression we had kind of like last episode, or the episodes leading up. And this episode brought a microscope to that, right? And it allowed us to see where they were really moving, right? Kim gets in the car accident. She's overworking herself. And let me just say, Rhea Seehorn, all the Emmys, all the praise, one of the best actresses on television, absolutely in love with her. Cannot say any more how fantastic she is in this show. She is the star of the show, along with Slippin' Jimmy, of course. She's a star of the show, and she's amazing. And in this episode, as well as in every episode, she just blows me away how subtle she is. But she saw she was being overworked, and she took positive steps. What she did is she went toward, because she's an adult, but the type of person she is that she gravitated towards trying to find something that fulfilled her when she wasn't being fulfilled. And the thing that fulfilled her was to help people. Now, Jimmy, when he wasn't fulfilled, the thing that fulfills him is to gratify himself, right? And psychologically speaking, this is not due to their nature, but it's the experiences they've had through life, right? How they have processed things. And Better Call Saul, like a show I mentioned earlier, Mad Men, is so psychological, and it's like going to a therapy session every episode, because you're seeing that Jimmy needs to make changes. He needs to open up. He needs to say to Kim, hey, look, I'm slipping. I need help. I can't even fucking talk about what happened to my brother, which was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. Their whole relationship, heartbreaking. And for him too, who is such Jimmy, he's a good person. He really is. He's a good guy and he's got a great heart. But what he has been through in his life, and what are you going to call it? His could be genetic. You know, we could get into bigger discussions as far as addictions and the way he is gratified, right? Or what makes him feel safe is are things that are not good for him. And he needs to be admitting that. And Kim, though she's helping herself, it's like, I don't want, there's no, it's so hard. You don't want to blame and say, Kim should be, you know, being confronting Jimmy more. Well, she's got her own life to live. Jimmy can't always have someone there helping him, right? That's what it comes down to. He can't help himself. And that's why people love him in the show. You know, he's a lovable loser, but the lovable loser hurts everyone around them. It's not fun to be around or to be involved with the lovable loser. Nobody wants that. That might be cute for a minute, but that's not a sustainable, happy lifestyle. And unfortunately, as we see in this episode, we're seeing the true decline here. This is it. He is becoming Saul. And then he will later become, damn it, I always forget the third name, the guy he is at, the guy he is now, you know, post Breaking Bad. I forget his name. He has a different name. When they're talking on the official podcast, they always use the names. And for a second, I have to like, who is he talking? And then sometimes he's talking about himself. And I'm like, what? But anyway, cause there's three guys, right? It's interesting. We're all different people, aren't we? And that's what this show is really saying. You know, it's all so complicated and it's all so confusing, but it's that way for everybody. And what the scenes when Jimmy and Kim are in the apartment together and they're sitting there on the couch, they just talk to each other really quick. It's just, you're seeing the end of a love, the end of a love affair is what you're seeing. I was trying to say dissolution. Okay, I'm from New Jersey. Give me a break. But you're seeing the end of a love affair and you're seeing people who probably shouldn't be together, but who probably love each other a lot. Maybe Kim isn't the right woman for Jimmy, and Jimmy certainly isn't the right man for Kim. She deserves so much better and so much more. But what does it mean when you say deserves, right? They're two people who found each other in the world and they're trying. And Better Call Saul is a love story, really. It's their love story. Just beautiful. We got to see some old faces this week. Yul and how that first incident of beating these kids up starts to get out of hand. Now it doesn't, the bat stops, right? But that's why this show is amazing, because the bat stops right in front of the kid's face. But guess what? The next time it's not. That's what they're trying to show you. That's why that scene was so long. Again, beautifully shot. Kids hanging upside down, the camera's upside down. The frantic nature of the shots, not being able to see the shadows. You see Jimmy's face, but you feel like those kids. Beautiful. Beautifully shot. Jimmy's getting down into it, and we're soon going to see. Now, last episode, we had a flash forward to Saul, right? In his famous famous office emblazoned with the Declaration of Independence, or no, the Constitution. I think it was the Declaration of Independence, actually, but it might be the Constitution. I love that. And that's why they did that, right? We're getting closer and closer and closer, okay? We're closer to that Saul than we are to the Jimmy with Chuck. And in this episode, we flash back to the Jimmy with Chuck, an early indication, indication of his relationship with Chuck, but also his relationship with Kim, how she is a natural and he has to kind of game the system to get what he wants all the time. And that too, the camera work in that was ridiculous. We start out and it's very simple, over the shoulder shots, two shots or over the shoulder shots. There was at first just Jimmy, right? Then Kim comes in, then Chuck comes in. Then I think someone else comes up and talks to them. And then we have a wide and we see them all straight shots, right? Jimmy and Kim have their conversation where, Jimmy kind of embarrasses himself by trying to make a joke of something to Chuck. And, you know, you can see that Kim is the natural and he's just a male guy. She's on her way up, you know, and he's the brother of the star. He's nothing. And he feels that way. He's really, his main goal of the day was to collect, basically take and book for the Oscars, right? Is Al Pacino going to win? And then when Kim leaves, we hold for a second. Next shot, from the basket, looking up through the mail at Jimmy. Genius, right? Because normally when you take a shot looking up at someone, it's to show their dominance. But this showed his weakness. And that's what's brilliant about these guys, because they thought about that. And that's such like pure filmmaking, you know? And they continue to use that shot. And the feeling it gives you is that he's caught in this. He's trapped in this. He's almost trapped in himself. You know, you're not looking up. He thinks he's up, but he's not. It's an illusion. You know, it almost uses that angle to deceive you at first. Because you think, oh, this is going to, you know, you get, you're trying to feel that feeling. Oh, he's up. You're looking up at him, but it doesn't. It still look, because of what the scene showed and because of what that basket represents, him being the mail boy, him just putting the betting slips into it, it makes him look inferior. Amazing. So the Jimmy part. Let's go to the second part of Better Call Saul. And everyone complains about this show. It's such a weird show. Half is Mike, half is Jimmy. I don't give a fuck. It doesn't ever bother me. Just doesn't bother me. I think that they do it perfectly. I could not describe why, other than to say that they perfectly inhabit the same universe. This was cool, okay? I love, love, love this setup of the German guys hiding in this huge warehouse, and Mike gets them like, they need beer, they need this. And then you see that one dude, he's going to do something, right? Mike, too, is going to have to make these choices. These people are going to get to the point where the death of other people is not going to be very significant to them. And we're going to watch that, and it's not going to be pretty. And this is a part of the show where it gets a little dicey, right? Because it was real. It was almost easy. I'm not going to say it was because it wasn't, but it's almost easy to make Jimmy, with such a great actor, it's easy to make him likable. It's easy to see him in the beginning where you have more sympathy. But as we see him make, he and Mike make decisions that cause the deaths of innocent people, or people involved in the business that, innocent or not, are not horrible people, we're going to have to be challenged as an audience in ways that we haven't. We're not challenged in this series, but we're in Breaking Bad, because we're going to start to watch Jimmy break bad. And I don't know whether they're going to do it. I don't know how far they're going to go, because my theory is that next season or the season after is going to be after Breaking Bad. And I've always thought that, and I think that the indications of the flashbacks and flash forwards are showing us that, and they always do the thing that is going to be fun and is going to be cool, and they still make it work, and I'm telling you they're going to do it. I don't know if it's going to be next season. It might be next season, because we're seeing Kim and Jimmy come to an end, and the show really isn't much without Kim. I mean, that's not true. The show could be anything, but as it's construed, I mean, this story, if she leaves, are we going to see a whole season of the businesses being built up on both sides? I don't know if we need to see that, you know, because the Jimmy and the Mike that get to that point are pretty much going to be the Jimmy and the Mike that we meet in Breaking Bad. So we've seen that already, in a sense. You know what I mean? So this might be the last season of Better Call Saul that doesn't basically ditch everyone and Mike, because I do think that I think that Mike is going to go away at some point. His story is going to end for this show, and it is just going to become Better Call Saul. I don't want that to happen. That's just how I feel it's going to happen. I might be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'm totally fine. Because the one thing I'll say about Better Call Saul, and we did podcast about Breaking Bad, but we never, every season I want to launch a Better Call Saul podcast. And the reason why I don't do it is because I don't really, that's like the only kind of, I like to analyze, I don't know why I don't do it. You don't need to theorize on a show. I don't know, maybe it's almost too personal. Maybe I think like I just kind of watch it and sit with it. I don't know why. It's weird, but it is almost a holy experience for me watching this show. I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, maybe it's because as a filmmaker, it touches me in that way. But I don't know. I'll have to explore why. Maybe I'm podcasting about it right now, and that's what I'm going to do on this show for the rest of the season. So there you go. So I am podcasting about it. I'll talk a little bit more about the Mike stuff. When Mike went to see his daughter-in-law, that was really touching. What's going on there? I thought that they were developing a romance with Mike and the other woman in the group. Also, sometimes it is hard to tell a length of time. That happened like 4 episodes ago, but it could have only been, you know, like a week or so. But then again, with Mike, he's the kind of guy he is. Would he go that long without seeing his granddaughter? I was a little unsure about the time there. I thought that scene, I had to remember for a second why she was mad at him, you know? We didn't touch back to see if, name is escaping me, the guy who got shot and, you know, set the whole thing up. I know that, they mentioned that he had a infection, right? When Mike was there and the guy came in and said, oh, he's got an infection, right? So I don't know what's going on with that. Mike is really entrenched now as the head of security. That move he pulled by going to the warehouses and checking on them actually ingratiated him. And I don't know whether I understand that or not. Somebody write in and explain that to me. How does pushing it like that ingratiate him? Maybe it's because he knows that they share such a deep sense of like work and commitment, and that showed that Mike was really committed to what was going on. I'm not, some of the things that Mike does, I have to admit that I just have to go with it because Mike is like way smarter than me. It's really true. I really feel that way. Like sometimes Mike starts doing something. He starts taking something apart. He starts, dropping, doing little notes here and there, doing whatever. And I don't know what the hell's going on and I don't care. I just let it go. But it's like Gus. It was about respect, and Mike knew that, or he was testing him in some way. Anyway, I'm fascinated with Mike, and that beginning to their relationship I found was really interesting because it's unspoken, right? It's through action, through men of action, get to know each other through action, and seeing the construction of this meth lab. I kind of feel like that's where it might end. That's what I'm kind of feeling like. I'm just getting this feeling, folks. This isn't like a theory or anything. Cause I just don't have theories about Better Call Saul. I can't explain it. But anyway, I just get this feeling that this would be a nice natural end to this, that, Gus is set up. He's the king. The meth lab is built. Gail is working there. And that's all we see of Mike. That's the last we see until, of course, Breaking Bad. And then we pick up on Sal's story. Sal, Jimmy, not either of them, actually. A guy who lives in, like, some other state at, what does he work at again? Panera Bread or something? I think that would be fascinating. So just to wrap up this episode of Better Call Saul, we're headed into it now. And, Kim has told Jimmy that she doesn't want to have a business with him, that she's going with this plan. It was sad when he was sleeping and she saw those drawings he was making, the dreams that he had. But in truth, he wasn't following through with those dreams. That's the thing, right? And I think she knows that too. She knows. So it's going to be sad. I'm kind of preparing myself as I get into these episodes that it's going to get darker, and it's probably going to get darker pretty fucking quick. And I'm interested what happens to Kim. Is Better Call Saul going to turn into becoming Jimmy again and finding Kim? Because if it is, I could start crying about it right now because I think that would be beautiful and I'm down for it. I am down for this to end happy. I really am. After all Jimmy did in Breaking Bad, I'm still down for this to end happy and for him to decide that this hiding just isn't working. So whether that means, I don't think that means turning himself in because, ladies and gentlemen, I do not believe that the American criminal justice system is fair. So I do not think that he will get justice by turning himself in to the cops. Probably the opposite would end up happening in that situation because of all the parties involved and what happened in Breaking Bad. But I do think that finding a resolution on the emotional level is what this show is about. So Better Call Saul, what a fantastic episode. Once again, I appreciate everyone being here with me on the daily, DV to the R. My name is Axel Foley. You can find us at dvrpodcast.com. We're going to be available 5 days a week to patrons, 3 to everyone else. Go to patreon.com/DVR. Send us an email, dvrpodcast@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter at dvrpodcast. It's Thursday. Tomorrow, I finish my first week. I don't know what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. We'll see. It'll be fun. Oh, fuck. Every goddamn time, 4 days in a row, I forgot to talk about ballers. All right, tomorrow I'll talk about ballers. But until then, peace out.